Okay, so it's the top of the hour, and I'm going to start our call. I'd like to welcome everybody to this month's NEC content call. We're really, really lucky to have Karen Osborne with us. Many of you may have seen Karen doing the food demonstrations and cooking classes with Dr. Rita Marie. Karen is a gourmet raw food Ayurvedic and macrobiotic chef and instructor. She's also a licensed Food for Life instructor for the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. She's a personal chef and a registered yoga teacher. TIYT. You'll have to tell me what that stands for, Karen. Karen teaches yoga for bone health, and her mission is to keep people living meaningful, independent lives as much as possible. She graduated from Living Light Culinary Institute in Fort Bragg, California, the Natural Epicurean in Austin, Texas, and Sundara Yoga Therapy in Austin, Texas, and studied yoga for osteoporosis with Dr. Lauren Fishman. Karen believes that the body has an amazing capability to heal if given the right materials. Her recipe for food for life is food, fitness, and fun. And actually, her website is called myfoodfitnessandfun.com. So it all fits quite well. She specializes in helping people feel their best deliciously without drugs and their side effects. She's the author of Low Glycemic Desserts, Satisfy Your Sweet Tooth While Nourishing Your Health. I have that one, it's great. And her other titles are Don't Tell Them It's Vegan, Making Natto, Italian Flavors, Whole Food Desserts, and she's a co-author of Desserts Making It Rich Without Oil. I guess that's with Dr. Rita Marie, right?
Great.
And she was featured in the May-June 2014 issue of Vegan Health and Fitness magazine. And you're welcome to go to her store to check out her wonderful ebooks. And she'll tell you more about her website, but it's myfoodfitnessandfun.com. So with that, I hand it over to you, Karen, and you can start to share. So welcome, everybody, and here's Karen.
Thank you. Yeah, the TIYT is trauma-informed yoga therapy. Everybody see that?
Yep.
My screen? So welcome to fracture prevention with yoga and nutrition. And before I get started, I just want to say this presentation is a sharing of my knowledge and information from my resource or my research and experience, and it's not intended as medical advice or as a replacement for a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional. So yoga and nutrition work together to prevent fractures without dangerous side effects. In preventing fractures to enjoy vibrant, independent lives, combining yoga and nutrition can maintain bone quality and prevent fractures with desirable side effects. The desirable side effects are like optimum weight, improved posture, increased balance, flexibility, core strength and muscle tone, and mindfulness, less chance of falls, and therefore less chance of fractures. So after a hip fracture, 31% of the people return to pre-fracture ADL function. That's activities of daily living, like getting dressed by yourself or going to the bathroom by yourself, making your own food. 34% return to pre-fracture mobility function. Among those who were ADL independent prior to fracture, 36% returned to independence. 27% survived but needed ADL assistance, and 37% died. That's from the Journal of General Internal Medicine 2016. So the fracture doesn't kill, but it's the resulting life changes. Is there a way to mute everybody?
Yeah, everybody should be on mute. Let's see, Gina, you're okay. I'm gonna mute her. And Jenny, I'm gonna mute. I think everybody's on mute now.
Great,
okay.
Thanks.
Yeah. And maybe you can speak up a little bit, Karen.
Okay.
Or so, stay closer to the microphone, yeah.
Yeah. The fracture doesn't kill, but it's the resulting life changes that reduce quality of life and even cause early death. So weeks of bed rest lead to increased chance of pneumonia, bed sores, digestive issues. You're not in charge of your own food anymore. You're at the mercy of whoever's kind enough to prepare food for you. Isolation from society and family. I mean, people come and visit you, but they have their own lives. Weaker muscles and therefore weaker bones. All right, DEXA scores, T scores, Z scores, osteopenia, osteoporosis, what is all of this? So the DEXA, you're probably all familiar with the dual energy X-ray absorbed geometry. And what they do is just shoot the x-rays through your bones and see, measure how much comes out on the other side to see like how dense your bones are. So if you have the bone density of an average 30-year-old woman, you're gonna fall right there in the middle of that bell curve. And if you're within plus or minus one standard deviation from that mean, they say you're normal. Anything from one standard deviation below the mean to 2.5 standard deviations below the mean, they tell you you have osteopenia. And then anything 2.5 standard deviations below the mean and farther, they tell you you have osteoporosis. So T scores are when they compare your number to the number of the average 30-year-old woman. Z scores are the number, your number compared with the scores of people your age. And osteopenia was never meant to be a diagnosis. It's just a word for like thinning bones. So when you get your scores, the first thing people do is panic, but don't panic. So the machines, one thing, the machines are not always reliable. The numbers differ from machine to machine. So if you're getting this test, the DEXA scan, like every couple of years, some people get it every year if they have been diagnosed with osteoporosis, you want to make sure you're getting it on the same machine because the machines are calibrated differently. The numbers differ from machine to machine. The technicians are not always reliable. They, you know, some places don't even require the technicians to be certified. And then the training differs from location to location. And then the people who read the test are not even the people who have administered the test. So those people have different trainings and different requirements. And then also they don't consider bone quality, which is as important as bone density. So right there on the screen, I have a podcast. It's on NPR, how a bone disease grew to fit the prescription. And that is really interesting to listen to. It's not very long, but it's enlightening. So the other thing I wanted to say about that is people who are 25 to 35 year olds are childbearing age and they require more mineral concentration in their bones to nourish a fetus and to produce breast milk. So of course their bone mineral density is gonna be higher, you know, higher in a 30-year-old woman than someone in menopause when this is not necessary. So like Dr. John McDougall says, the body is efficiently functioning the way it was made to function. So let's look at the structure of bone. So there's two layers. You have the outer layer, the cortical compact bone, and that's kind of the same for everyone, just a smooth layer. And then the inner layer is that trabecular bone, the spongy layer. And it is there that we look at bone quality. So you can see how the matrix is kind of put together. I'm going to go to the next slide and just look at this. Sorry, this is not a great picture. It's blown up. But on the right, you can see porous. It's the inner bone. And it looks really porous, like they're not very close together. And then that picture in the middle, the mineralized bone, that is, it looks a lot stronger, doesn't it? So if you think of it like a ladder, if the rungs of the ladder were farther apart and a really heavy person stepped on the top rung, it would be more likely to break than if the rungs were closer together. It's the same thing with the bone. It could be, if it's porous and there's an impact, it's more likely to break than if the bone is mineralized, spongy layer. So how do we get it mineralized? We have a couple of types of bone cells that work on this. So the osteoclasts are large cells that attach to bones and secrete cytokines, which dissolve bone substance, returning the minerals and proteins to the bloodstream. And then the osteoblasts use that material to come in. They make this protein matrix of the bones and then attract all the minerals. So the osteoclasts break down the old bone. Your body resorbs the material, and then the osteoblasts use it to lay down fresh new bone. But when you get your scores, a lot of times traditional medicine, they just want to scare you into taking drugs. So there's two types of osteoporosis medications, and one are the anti-resorptives. And they suppress the action of the osteoclast, those cells that that break down the old bone, like Fosamax, Boniva, Actinel, Reclast. You know, you've heard of all these on the commercials, I'm sure. But these can cause gastrointestinal problems. And some of the other side effects of the anti-resorptives can be irritation of the esophagus, esophageal cancer, bone, joint, and muscle pain, flu-like symptoms, fever, headaches, atrial fibrillation.
Choices. Let's take a look at the true and false section. Read through those sentences, then look for the word or words that are underlined. Does that word or word
can everybody that mute?
Make that statement true, or does it make it?
Thank you. So flu-like symptoms, fever, headaches, atrial fibrillation, uveitis, low trauma fractures of the femur, delayed fracture healing, and osteonecrosis of the jaw. So I have someone in my family who actually was on one of these drugs and just cracked a rib getting into bed. And it also messed up her digestion for the rest of her life. When they put you on these drugs, they tell you you have to be standing up or sitting straight up for the first 30 minutes after you take them, because they can do such damage to your esophagus and your digestive tract. So the other type of osteoporosis medications are the ones that they're anabolics, and they boost the action of the osteoblasts, the ones that build bone. So Tymlos and Forteo are one or two. They can cause low blood pressure, dizziness, nausea, heart palpitations, kidney stones, leg cramps, joint pain. It can interfere with the heart and brain function. It can cause bone cancer. And it's recommended that you stay on those for no more than 2 years. Then Evenity is another one that can cause joint pain, headaches, increased risk of heart attack, stroke, and death. And that one, they recommend you stay on it for no more than 12 months. And since the anabolics only build up bone, there's a greater bone loss when you stop those drugs. And so then it's necessary to take the anti-resorptives after that, or else you can lose everything you've gained and more. The anti-resorptives inhibit the action of the osteoclast, disabling them from being able to remove old bone. And for the first 6 to 12 months of being on those, it looks like the osteoblasts continue to build bone, but then they slow down because everything in your body, you want balance. You're getting signals all the time. So they're not, if you're on those anti-resorptives, you're not breaking down bones. So your osteoblasts don't get the signal that they need to build more bone. So after like 2 to 5 years on those anti-resorptives, the osteoblasts tend to stop mineralizing bone altogether, and it leaves too much old damaged bone, resulting in poor bone quality. So it sounds pretty good, you know, right? To have some drugs that stop the breaking down of bone, right? But that's not really a good thing. On the left, we have somebody with a normal spine, and then that woman on the right has osteoporosis and kyphosis, the curvature of the spine. So on the right is a picture of a vertebra with a little microfracture in it. And the average head on your shoulders weighs 10 to 12 pounds. And your body is capable of taking care of that right there where it is. But if your head moves like 2 inches forward, that head weighs like 32 pounds on your spine. And if it moves 3 inches forward, it's a 42 pound load on your spine. So if you have that little microfracture there and you don't have the osteoclast coming in to clean it up and let the osteoblast lay down new bone there, it's weak and it can just collapse. And then that forces your head forward a little bit, which puts more weight on your vertebra. If you have another microfracture in another vertebra, it's more likely to collapse. So each microfracture in a vertebra increases the chance of another fracture. So conventional medicine's first choice of treatment for low bone density is usually a bisphosphonate. That's the one that inhibits the action of the osteoclast. But, and I'm not saying never use drugs. What I'm saying is try to figure out the cause and fix it before you take the drugs. So there's a time for using the drugs, but that would be when a patient has had a fracture and has such poor bone quality that he or she is in danger of more fractures. So it should be temporary while the cause of the bone loss is determined and treated. But much of the time, the cause of low bone density is just, it's treatable with lifestyle changes. Right, so there's the osteoblast, the cell that builds bone. And when the bone is stressed, the osteoblasts secrete osteocalcin, which is a protein matrix, and it attracts the minerals and hardens that trabecular bone, that inner layer of the bone. So you want to make sure you have all the nutrients required, and it's more than just calcium and phosphorus. You need protein that provides the material for the bone cells to synthesize that matrix that attracts the minerals, and protein is needed for the growth and repair of tissue. You do need calcium. That's one of the main minerals in bone, and it helps muscles contract. Phosphorus is the other main mineral in bone. Vitamin D3 is necessary to get the calcium into the bloodstream. It increases the absorption of calcium and phosphorus. Zinc is necessary for proper calcium absorption and to produce the bone matrix and the enzymes that the osteoclasts use to break down old, worn-out bone. And it stimulates bone formation and inhibits bone resorption, balance. You also need magnesium, which regulates metabolism. Calcium needs magnesium to work. It helps the osteoblasts and it keeps the osteoclasts in check. Vitamin K2 activates the proteins that move calcium into the bones and teeth and out of the arteries. Need vitamin C that helps activate, absorb, and assimilate minerals needed for bone formation. Vitamin C is needed to make collagen to keep bones flexible so they can absorb impact without breaking. And silica appears to increase the rate of mineralization of bone. It firms and strengthens, and it helps to develop collagen. More nutrients. Omega-3 fatty acids improve bone strength by decreasing inflammation, thereby decreasing activation of the cells that break down bone and increasing production of cells that build bone, increasing the amount of calcium in bone, more balance. And potassium neutralizes bone depleting metabolic acids, reducing loss of calcium. Vitamin B6 and beta carotene are both necessary for hydrochloric acid production, which is necessary for calcium absorption. And boron is required for proper metabolism and utilization of different bone building elements such as calcium, magnesium, and vitamin D3. And we're talking about getting it from food, not supplements. All right. Copper aids in the formation of collagen, contributing to mechanical strength of bone. And with zinc, helps inhibit bone resorption. Folate is necessary for red blood cell production and reducing inflammation. Vitamin B12 is necessary for red blood cell production and nerve sheath health. Manganese can help reduce bone loss. And strontium draws extra calcium into the bones. And that we are totally talking about food. So the synthetic strontium has been associated with heart problems, and so has strontium citrate. So definitely want to get it from food like root vegetables, spinach, lettuce, carrots, peas, beans, potatoes, and celery. Last page of nutrients. Phytoestrogens, nutrients from plants, have weak estrogenic activity and have beneficial estrogenic effects on bone. Soybeans, garbanzo beans, bean sprouts, asparagus, garlic, flaxseed, black cohosh root, and grapes are good sources. So estrogen tempers osteoclastic activity, increases calcium absorption, stimulates the development of osteoblasts. And E2 estradiol from the ovaries is most helpful prior to menopause, and the blood levels begin to decline around 5 years before menopause begins. Then after that time, fat cells continue to produce it, but at lower levels. The adrenal glands produce the less potent but still helpful estrone, and this changeover and the predominant estrogen found in the body sometimes is not adequate to maintain the bone density. So like between, and that's alone, I mean, there are things you can do about it, but bone loss can reach 2 to 4% a year during the 5 to 7 years immediately following menopause. And then I have a website, whfoods.com, World's Healthiest Foods. That's a really good website for getting lists of foods that contain each of the nutrients that I went over. Water, you wanna be hydrated because that helps eliminate toxins and helps in absorption and transportation of the nutrients in the body. And then natto is a superfood for bones. So it's fermented soybeans. It would be beneficial to learn how to make it or learn how to enjoy it if you buy it. But the reason I got into it was because it's the best plant source of vitamin K2. But I found out that it also contains a lot of the other minerals that we need for our bones, like magnesium, calcium, zinc, copper, protein, manganese, potassium, iron, selenium. It has phytoestrogens and a little bit of vitamin B6 and folate. And then I have a chart. This is, you can download this chart at drrusselljaffe.com. So what this is, has the foods that have like a acid effect or an alkaline effect on your body. And if you, so the blood is going to keep that 7.4 pH no matter what. If you're too acidic, it's going to borrow the alkalizing minerals from your bones. Most of the minerals in your body are stored in your bones. So if you eat 20 to 25% of your foods from the acid, more acid side of the chart, and 75 to 80% of your foods from the more alkaline side of the chart, it's pretty easy to keep the acid-alkaline balance and keep the minerals in your bones. And also, besides bone health, it keeps you from getting sick so often. I've been doing this for over 20 years, and I used to get antibiotics about 6 times a year. And since I've been paying attention to this, I haven't had them at all in like 21 or 22 years. So people, you know, it's controversial. Some people say this doesn't work, but I'd say try it and see. Let's see. All right, so we've gone over like the nutrients and kind of how the bone cells work. This is just, we're getting into how yoga can help. This is just an illustration of Wolf's Law. And the law is the architectural strength of a bone develops along the lines of force to which that bone is subjected. So on the left is the bone, the femur of a newborn. You can see it's pretty straight up. And then one to the right of that is the femur of a two-year-old, like a toddler who's learning to walk. So they've had more pressure from the upper body on the neck of that femur, so it's causing it to curve in. And then the next one over to the right is the femur of a five-year-old who's had more years of walking and putting that pressure on the bone. And then the one on the very right is the femur of a five-year-old quadriplegic. So it looks even smaller than the newborn. It might just be the picture, but you can see it's not curving at all because there's never been any pressure on that bone at all. So this is a study by Lauren Fishman, who's an MD, and I did study with him. And he had the idea that yoga could help increase bone density. And so he designed a study where he used 12 yoga poses and had the people in his intervention group do these 12 poses every day for 2 years. And they held the poses for 30 seconds. So it didn't take long at all. They just committed to doing it every day for 2 years. And then in his control group, they didn't do yoga at all. So he found poses that would stress the parts of the body that are measured in the DEXA scan, because that was an easy way to measure it. And you can see the people in the study that did the yoga actually had increased bone density in the hip and the spine. And the people who did not do the yoga in that control group actually lost a little bit. All right, so how does that work? The name of the game is fracture prevention, right? Whether you have osteoporosis or not, 90% of fractures occur from a fall. And if you can prevent a fall, pretty much you can prevent fracture. So yoga is an exercise that is no impact. And it promotes bone solidity, it builds muscle strength, and promotes balance. And all three of these are critical for avoiding fractures. So a lot of people who have osteoporosis also have arthritis or some other condition where
like running or tennis or any kind of impactful exercise or even lifting weights is going to be uncomfortable on their joints. So this is something that we can address in yoga. Other benefits include no injuries. It's portable. You can do it just about anywhere. It's time tested. Another benefit is lower blood pressure, increases strength and range of motion, and it promotes independence. So it's an exercise that can build bone without harming joints. So yoga uses body weight to strengthen the bones. So you can see in the yoga class for bone health, you're never just standing in a pose. All the muscles are always active, but you can see here she's stressing all the bones in her legs, her pelvic area, and her lumbar spine. And once you have held a pose for 8 seconds, that protein matrix comes out from that bone cell and starts attracting the minerals from your bloodstream to harden that inner layer of your bone. So that happens after 8 seconds, and it keeps attracting the minerals from your bone up to 72 seconds. So in the yoga for bone health classes, we hold the poses, usually a minute. So they found out, so Lauren Fishman had people in that original study holding the poses for 30 seconds, and that did build bone density. But he later found out that there's even more benefit if you hold it up to 42 seconds, or hold it 40 seconds. And then, so it starts attracting the minerals, and then it's still attracting after 40 seconds up to 72 seconds, but it's kind of attracting at a slower rate. So there he found benefit even up to a minute, holding it a minute. But if you want more benefit, then you stop doing the pose, do another pose, and come back and do that one again for another 40 to 60 seconds. And that's where you get the most benefit. And we do twists. And twists are the best way to increase bone quality in the spine. And they're safe as long as the spine stays straight. So twists initiate the process of the protein matrix being excreted and attracting the minerals. And if you have osteoporosis, that's about the only way to build bone density in your spine. Because if you have osteoporosis, you certainly don't want to bend and lift anything with that forward curvature of your spine, because that could cause a fracture. Another way that yoga helps build bone is it uses body weight to strengthen muscles. And here we gently build muscle, which the muscle stresses the bones without you having to do anything. You know, just by existing, you're building your bone. And it also helps us avoid falls by having more strength. So the muscle puts pressure on your bone when you're just sitting around watching TV or lying in bed. You're stressing your bone. And working on balance. Yoga works on balance. It decreases the chance of a fall, therefore reducing the chance of a fracture. So like I said, 90% of the fractures occur because of a fall, whether you have osteoporosis or not. So proprioceptors are most abundant in our ankles. So working on strength and balance and also mindfulness, that's being fully present and aware, can reduce the risk of falling, reducing the risk of fracture. And one more, yoga works on breath and relaxation. So that's one more benefit towards preventing fractures. Cortisol is released from the adrenal glands in response to stress. It allows the body to respond to danger immediately, increasing blood pressure to enhance muscular power and increasing blood sugar to provide additional energy. But prolonged elevation reduces the ability of the osteoblasts to form bone and can divert stem cells away from becoming osteoblasts and towards becoming fat cells in bone marrow. And cortisol is also acidic and will cause the blood to borrow those alkalizing minerals from your bones, causing bone loss. And also, by making the exhales longer than the inhales and letting your belly expand on the inhale, and that's opposite of the way that people, most people breathe in their daily life. But when we do that, we elicit the relaxation response and stop the cortisol from flowing through your body. So there can be many other causes of bone loss or other, but a lot of times it's just nutrition and lifestyle. But if there are like hormonal imbalances, digestive issues, pharmaceuticals, malnutrition, and more, like the digestive issues, any digestive issues like food intolerances, sensitivities, allergies, reflux, hypochlorhydria, H. pylori, IBD, IBS, leaky gut, gastritis, or any other condition that interferes with digestion, causing the nutrients not to be absorbed. You can eat all the right foods, but you can still have bone loss. For example, hypocalcemia, that's low blood calcium, it can be caused by low calcium intake. It can also be caused by GI problems that cause you not to absorb the calcium you do ingest. It can be caused by overactivity of the parathyroid gland, which can be caused by a vitamin D deficiency, which can result from low intake of vitamin D, or not enough sun exposure, or kidney disease, and on and on and on. So if the diet and lifestyle don't fix it by themselves, these things can be determined, these other causes can be determined and addressed before considering pharmaceuticals with dangerous side effects. But much of the time, the cause is sedentary lifestyle and low intake of necessary nutrients and high intake of acidic animal protein. This can be remedied with lifestyle changes with more pleasant side effects, including improved posture, better balance, more range of motion, greater strength, better coordination, less anxiety and depression, more equanimity and resilience. So if the cause of bone loss requires more digging, these lifestyle changes can help preserve and increase bone quality during and after treatment and contribute to a better quality of life as we age. And here's some recommended reading and listening. There was one, this study right here, they looked at, oh gosh, almost 5,000 women age 67 and up, and they followed them for 15 years. They all had either normal bone density at the start of the study or osteopenia. And then what they found out is less than, so osteoporosis would develop in less than 10% of older postmenopausal women in the 15 years. So that's 10% of older people might develop osteoporosis in 15 years if they started with normal bone density or mild osteopenia. It would take 5 years for 10% of the women to develop osteoporosis if they started it with moderate osteopenia. And it would take 1 year for 10% of them to develop osteoporosis if they had advanced osteopenia at the start. So I hope that this has given you a little confidence that you have control of this and that drugs don't need to be thrown at it as your first line of defense. And thank you for listening.
Oh, thank you, Karen. That was very, very informative and great presentation. Wonderful slides.
Thank you. I'm trying to figure out how to unshare or stop this. Oh, I've got something covering it. Okay.
So we can open up for questions.
There we go.
So anybody have any questions? Catherine.
Hey, Karen, that was a really great presentation. Thank you.
A couple
questions. Does osteoporosis and osteopenia run, is there a genetic component to it?
I'm not sure if it's genetic or lifestyle. Like, you kind of inherit the lifestyle from your family. Like, you might have grown up eating the same things as your, you know, what your mother has made. So there's definitely a genetic part of that. Like, some, if your mother had thin bones, you're probably going to look like your mother, right? And yeah, I think it's a mixture.
Okay.
Yeah, that's true. You know, it's the whole nature nurture argument. You know, it's, you know, your genes are not your destiny. There are definitely some genes that predispose people for osteoporosis, but it's mostly the environment that has a big impact. You know, Karen mentioned cortisol, so stress. Cortisol is a catabolic hormone, and we all live in a high-stress environment, so that really reduces bone density. And there was an interesting thing that happened in the UK. They were digging up a cemetery at a church. They had to do some renovations. And the cemetery, or the people that were laid to rest there, were from the 18th century, so 1700s. And the bones of the people in the 1700s were more dense than the average bone of people in the 20th century. So sort of it's the 19th century that they, I mean, sorry, 20th century that they dug this up. And it tells you the influence. So you would think in the 1700s, they don't have great, you know, water and sanitation, and they don't have all these, you know, devices that we have. And maybe they don't have the diversity of food that we have, but for sure they had denser bones than we do now. So that tells you the big impact that our modern lifestyle has on our bones.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm sure they worked harder.
they worked
their bones.
Yeah.
So a couple other questions, if I may. In terms of, you know, I think, I know I grew up with this, with, you know, hearing that, you know, drink milk in order to build your bones. You need the calcium. Or if you don't drink milk, because I hate milk, even though I grew up on a dairy farm, you know, it's like, oh, take calcium pills. So, which I don't do. You know, what are your thoughts on calcium? I mean, obviously you pointed toward all kinds of other things that are involved, that are needed. So how, in the scope of things, how important is calcium and this whole, like, you know, drink your milk kind of campaign? And then also kind of related to that, since there are so many different things involved that you mentioned, Karen, how do you know where you're, you know, which is the problem in order to try to correct? How do you figure that out? Is it just a process of, you know, playing around and eliminating, or what? Appreciate your thoughts.
Sure. In answer to the calcium question, there have been studies, the societies that have drink the most dairy or eat the most dairy have the most osteoporosis. So that's where I stand on that. So calcium is one of the main minerals in your bone. You do need calcium, but I would rather get it from food. Like, collard greens are the best plant source of calcium. I forget how many milligrams of calcium are in like a cup, but I know one time I figured it out, and it's like, if I just eat a whole bunch of collard greens a day, that if it's a nice big bunch, I would get my allowance of calcium. But because it's more bioavailable, plant calcium is more bioavailable than other, like dairy. So you don't need as much of it as as their recommended allowance for dairy, because you can absorb it. So I think
what Karen said is actually true. The countries that it's a lot of it, the dairy calcium link is a marketing, big marketing thing. And the countries that push dairy, or Western societies in particular, they show their RDAs for calcium are a little bit higher because of the fact that the dairy actually ends up leaching calcium from the bone. So you have to end up taking more calcium to make up that requirement. And there's a really nice article on the Harvard website. You can read that. And then the countries that are not reliant on dairy. So most Asian countries and many African countries, they're not, such big dairy eaters. They actually don't have such issues with osteoporosis, as Karen said. And in terms of finding out what the root cause is, you've got to really start at the basics and make sure that you have all the nutrients. First, that you have all the nutrients, and secondly, that you can absorb the nutrients. So starting there, and then looking at the other pieces, which is, stress and general lifestyle, making sure you have enough, activity, because our peak bone density occurs around age 30. And then after that, it's just this, bone is a living tissue, as Karen said, and it's this balance between osteoblasts and osteoclasts, and want to make sure that we're building up more than we're breaking down. And we really have to do a lot. I mean, keep moving and stay alkaline. And this whole thing with alkalinity is really important. The environment is very, very important. I know Karen said it's controversial, and it's harder to have studies to show the importance of an alkaline diet for maintaining bone density, but slowly there are some studies to show that, because a lot of the time it was this whole idea of alkalinity is kind of like not strong medicine, or it's not scientifically based, but actually now there are some studies to show the importance of alkalinity in maintaining your bone density. So there are some real basic things that are important. So digestive health, maintaining alkaline status, and making sure you have all the nutrients. Do you have anything to add to that, Karen?
Oh, no, that covered it. Yeah, I just, it worked for me.
Thanks.
CJ has a couple of questions.
Yeah.
One is, how do you check if you're absorbing vitamins and minerals?
Well, like a vitamin, you can get some of them measured. And then do you have access to all those assessments?
Yes.
You can fill those out and kind of analyze those.
So mainly those are the two assessments, and then the testing, the chemistry testing, right?
Yeah. I definitely want to know what my vitamin D
is. So
you have to have an idea. You're missing something in order to pursue knowing it, right?
Well, my philosophy is these are all the nutrients that are necessary for bone health, and so I'm going to make sure that I look at this list, and I eat foods with all these nutrients in them. I don't necessarily know what my status is on all of the nutrients, but I just make sure I eat them all, and I don't seem to have any digestive issues. Haven't broken bone, like the broken bone that I had was an impact. Even these big young men that have that same impact would have had broken, that bone would have broken. So that wasn't because of the bone density.
You can measure certain nutrients, for example, vitamin D in your blood. You can have a stool test to see if you are malabsorbing your fats or not, because vitamin D is a fat-soluble vitamin, and vitamin A is also, important for bone health. It's also a fat-soluble vitamin. Vitamin K is fat-soluble. So you got to make sure that you're able to absorb your fats. And then, of course, the minerals need a somewhat acidic environment for their optimal absorption. So calcium, magnesium, zinc. So you've got to make sure you have enough stomach acid there in order to optimize or make those minerals bioavailable. And the way, I mean, to check on that, you just need to make sure that, you know, you have bitter foods, that you chew properly, just the, all the basic things. But if you're asking about measurement, different vitamins are measured in different ways.
Right. You know, right. So. But we throw that around a lot. I've heard that a lot since coming into the program, you know, absorption, you know, maybe you're not absorbing this or you're not absorbing that. And I'm thinking, well, how do I know? You know, if my doctor says to me, well, your test is fine, why would I check on that? You know, so I've been caught on that
before. You can have a stool test, and then, so that's a good way of knowing whether you're absorbing or not. The GI effects is one stool test, there are many other stool tests. So that's the first thing to check on, whether you're absorbing.
Would it be a stool test for all of them? Stool test for all of them? No.
No, the stool test is just looking at your digestion and absorption and your microbiome and any inflammation in the gut. And as well, it looks at the short chain fatty acids and any presence of any parasites and any other kind of pathogenic, bacteria. But then there are tests like the NutriVal or the Metabolomics. These are organic acids, and they check our functional need for certain vitamins, in particular the B vitamins, and the B vitamins are also important for bone health. Probably all the vitamins are important for bone health. I mean, Karen highlighted the main ones, but I don't know if that answers your question. But it's very important to make sure that you're able to absorb your fats in order to absorb the fat soluble vitamins. And then it's also important to have sufficient stomach acid to make sure that you're absorbing the minerals.
Okay. All right. And then go ahead.
Oh, I was just say, like, if you don't have, like, if you didn't have enough hydrochloric acid, or you weren't absorbing your fats, you would have some digestive issues.
But you could take digestive enzymes, you could have bitters, you can have a little bit of lemon in water or apple cider vinegar in water before your meals to stimulate the secretion of digestive enzymes and
stuff. Okay. Okay, that's good, because I'm doing all that stuff and I don't know that I'm having any problems. So y'all are making me feel good about my habits.
Okay.
The second question I had was, I fight high calcium, and I don't know what causes high calcium versus low calcium. I do not take any calcium supplements whatsoever because of it.
You have high calcium in your blood?
Well, whatever blood test they do for calcium,
You need to check your parathyroid hormone because sometimes the parathyroid is high. It can increase blood levels of calcium. You need to check your parathyroid hormone and ionized calcium, and then it may be an issue with the parathyroid. And that's not a calcium issue. And actually, Catherine asked about calcium supplementation. And unless somebody is actually has osteopenia or osteoporosis, I'm very leery about calcium supplementation. Because calcium can be deposited in places other than the bone, for example, in the arteries and in the joints. And that's why we want to make sure that vitamin D status is optimal, and that you take K as well, because vitamin D increases the absorption of calcium, and K helps make sure that the calcium gets to the bones. And Mihaela will probably be able to talk more about that, about the actions of these specific nutrients. But it's we can increase the absorption of calcium with other nutrients like vitamin A as well, and also fish oil or omega-3s. They increase the absorption of calcium. So you don't have to take actually calcium. You can take calcium from food sources or have calcium from food sources, and then make sure you have the other nutrients to increase the absorption of calcium. You can sort of get your calcium indirectly by making sure you have the other nutrients.
Well, that's interesting because my vitamin D is on the low side and my vitamin supplement doesn't have the K2. So I'm on the verge of ordering the liposomal D with the K2. So I did have, is it a calcium scan where it measured, is that the one that measures, after I got that, the doctor said it was a good score. And he said, well, that tells us that the calcium is not being deposited in the vessels.
You had a CAC then, you had a CAC. Okay. You're looking at the plaque. Okay. That's looking at something else. That's looking at the plaque. Okay.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, his conclusion was then that the calcium is not being in my arteries. Mm-hmm. It's going where it should go. Does that sound right?
Well, without having seen the test results, I really don't know. But maybe.
Okay. So you're not familiar with what? Well, yeah. Okay. I just thought you might know off the top of your head. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you, ladies, for your time.
You're welcome. Anybody else?
Yeah. I have a question. This is Gina.
Hi, Gina.
Hi. So I am getting my bone density scan the next few days. So this is very timely, Karen. So thank you. I am about to find out. And so I want to know how soon one can reverse the bone loss or anything like that if I start changing my diet, or how soon can I turn it around?
You want to concentrate on diet and also stressing those bones.
Stop it.
So, yeah, I've seen studies. So that the Lauren Fishman study, he measured it like 2 years from the time the start of the study. But I've seen some that have said like in 6 months they've noticed progress. So I don't know.
I agree with you, Karen. It's in 6 months you can show progress, and there is a really good test available through Genova. It's called the bone resorptive assessment or bone resorption assessment, and it doesn't measure bone density, but it measures bone turnover. So for people that I'm supporting who have osteopenia or osteoporosis, in order to track their progress and how well the strategy is working, we do those bone resorption tests. It's a urine test at home. It's under $200. And depending on what the results are, we do them either every quarter or every 6 months to track. So you can actually, you know, see that, because there are certain biomarkers. If they're elevated, it means that bone turnover is high. That means there's more osteoclasts than blasts. So you have more bone breakdown than build up. And so you can actually measure it and track it.
Okay, thank you. I will keep talking with you all later.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I had talked to Gina about the yoga class. Anybody's welcome to join my yoga classes. I do yoga for bone health on Tuesday and Thursday morning, and I'm about to put together an evening class. So.
Great.
So thank you, Gina. And Hedy has her hand raised.
Yeah, hi. My question is supplements that I'm taking, because I have osteoporosis throughout my whole body, and on their density tests, it's pretty bad. And I don't take that wait 30 minutes and stand medication. But I also have arthritis throughout my spine and degenerative disc disease. and joint disease. So I want to make sure I'm not overdoing my regimen.
So what is your question?
I think we lost it. Leaky heart valves also. So I take that with my hearts, but I also take
she's cutting out.
Yeah, cutting out, Hedy. Hedy, you're cutting out.
Capsule of
Hedy, let's wait for your We lost Hedy. So she'll be back. So so we'll move. I see Trisha has her hand up.
Hi, I just wanted to know if you can list where you got some of your studies on regarding the cortisol and how its effects with bone loss, and also too, like with fat deposits into the bone, because I just noticed that there's a possibility I have a fat tumor in one of my bones, and I would like to try to work on my bone health because I know I have osteopenia.
Cool, yeah. They get this recording, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so on that last page, it has the references. So the one about the fat.
Or if you can point me in the direction of where I can look it up, I can do the deeper dive. I'm just trying to need to look on it for myself.
It's either in it's in Lonnie Simpson's book, or it's not the Yoga for Osteoporosis book. It's the one of the other two books that are on that reference page.
In that reference page? Okay, good. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, thank you. Hedy, you're back. You want to try?
Yes, can you hear me now?
Yes,
I don't know how much you heard that prior of what I was taking, because I wanted to make sure that I wasn't taking too much. And I take 3 capsules of nettles at 900 mg a capsule. I take 440 mg a horsetail, and I take MK2 and MK7. And 10,000 units of vitamin D. And I wanted to know if all this could be reversed, but you already, I think, answered that with the test that Genova gives, the absorption test. But I want to know if I'm on the right track, or is there anything else I should add, or is there anything I should take away from my regimen?
Karen?
The nettles, horsetail, and alfalfa are, so I always make a, they're good for the bones, but I always make like a, an infusion of that. So I'm not sure how many milligrams of anything is in the infusion.
But yeah, there's different ways of taking the herbs, but those are the herbs that are really good for bone, bone health.
And I did know that. I've been taking it because at night when I would turn around in my sleep, I would crack. And since I've been on my regimen, I don't crack anymore.
That's great news.
But if you're taking 10,000 IUs of vitamin D, you need to have your vitamin D checked every 3 months, because vitamin D is toxic at high levels. And and so you just need to really monitor your vitamin D.
That I am set up for a retested dose.
Okay. Okay. And then are you working with a private coach?
Yes, I'm working with Isabel. So she did set me up for additional blood work for next month.
Yeah, and she can help you, you know, with your bone health and digestive health and all of those things to help optimize it all for you.
Okay, that was my question.
Cool.
Okay, great. Thank you. Okay. Thank you. And we have Ronnie, then Ronnie, and then Rob. You have to unmute yourself. It's not working.
There we go.
Okay, great.
Hey, that was a great presentation. Is it somewhere up, does it live somewhere on the ERC web, like the, does it live somewhere on ERC so we can watch it again? Because that was really good.
It will. It'll be, the recording will be posted on the ERC recordings page. So it'll take a few days before it's posted there. And then the presentation notes, the slideshow PDF will also be there.
Yeah. Thanks for your encouraging words about, first of all, you were talking about how tests can be wrong. How machines need to be, they're not always calibrated the same. That's really valuable information. And how you can build, which is like, I got a diagnosis and I think, oh crap, I don't even believe it actually. So, because if you're saying something about not being, that it's not testing for the quality of your bones, I'm wondering if you can say something about that, Karen, or Patrick? Sure.
I'll use my mom for an example. Okay, she actually participated in Lauren Fishman's first study, and she has she had low bone density. They put her on the drugs a long time ago, and it's not recommended that you stay on them for a long time. Even the anti-resorptives, they put her on them, and she couldn't remember because they never took her off. She couldn't remember if it was 10 or 15 years. And that, when she's the one that got into bed and cracked a rib, and that's when they noticed that she'd been taking them for a long time. But since then, she's refused every drug. She does the yoga and eats right, but those drugs damaged her digestive system for life. She's had so many issues because of that. But her bone quality, her numbers are way, way into osteoporosis, but she has fallen so many times, caught herself on her wrist so many times, caught herself on her, like fallen on her hip and stuff. She's never broken a bone. So that's bone quality.
How can you tell?
How can you tell what?
How does one know about their bone quality? And are all those protocols you guys have been talking about, does that change the quality of your bone? Or
yeah, go ahead.
I think you'll answer.
If somebody with osteoporosis could have the same size bone as somebody without, right? So the bone quality, we're just talking about that middle part, the middle part of the bone, and how close together, like the rungs of the ladder, how close together those pieces are. So if it's mineralized, it's going to absorb a lot more impact without breaking than if it's not. And I'm saying this is what you can do to mineralize your bones. You can stress the bones and provide all the nutrients that it needs to harden.
But you can't really, one really can't.
You're cutting out and I couldn't hear that, but there is a test. I think I know what you're asking. There is a test. It's kind of new and you have to ask for it, and they can do it at the same time as they do the DEXA scan. It's just something else on the machine that will, I wish I could remember what it was called, but it can scan for bone quality, and it might have bone quality in its title. I'll have to look that one up. Unless, Lisa, do you know?
No, I can't think of it right now. But yeah, there is a way of measuring the bone bone quality, and I do believe it's with the DEXA. But we'll have to look that up and let you know.
Yeah, it's something else they do along with the DEXA at the same time, so you don't have to go in and have another appointment or anything.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's great.
Sure.
Okay, Rob.
Hello. I just had two quick things. The first one was natto. I've taken natokinase for my heart.
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard of natto. Is that something you can buy at the grocery store in the produce section or something?
It is the same. So they probably get the natokinase for your supplement from the soybean. So it's just fermented soybeans, and they use starter. I forget what it's called. Spores, some kind of spores. And I get them from Cultures for Health, but I make it. You can buy it like at an Asian market, usually a Japanese market. There are studies like the parts of Japan that eat that have less osteoporosis than the parts that don't. And it's a little slimy, and people, it's like you have to learn to like it, but I make things with it, like salad dressings, or just put it in my salad, and then put like seasonings in my salad. You don't even need a dressing because it's a little bit slimy, and it just kind of, you stir it up and it makes like a dressing. But it just tastes like beans and salad to me.
It's an acquired taste. It's an acquired, definitely an acquired.
I would not eat it by itself.
The other comment I just had was about the test you talked about by Lauren Fishman.
Uh-huh.
People do yoga for 2 years, and then the control group, who I guess they had to agree not to do any kind of exercise.
I don't think it was not to do any kind of exercise, but they didn't get those 12 poses that stress the parts of the bone that the DEXA measures.
Yeah, because I think... And there's lots of other exercise that build bones, I think.
Yeah.
It's kind of a weird test, I thought. But I've been doing yoga for like 13 years now, and I found that I need more than just yoga. You have to do both.
And it also, walking is great. I mean, all kinds of things, exercises, anything you can do is great. But the thing is, like, if you're doing yoga, like some flow classes, they don't hold the poses.
Right.
So you want that process, you want to hold it long enough for that process to
happen. Yeah, that's interesting. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. Catherine has her hand up.
Yeah, thanks. I have so many questions. I wanted to pull the thread a little bit more on the same point that Rob was making about the yoga poses and what other kinds of things you can do. So if you don't practice yoga and there's just like, you know, one or two kinds of poses one should try doing, are there certain kinds of poses that are better than others? And then also, what about weightlifting? Because I always heard that weightlifting was like what you should do. And then kind of with the what kind of poses to do, you had mentioned about how you have to be careful with like not twisting the spine if you have any curvature already. What do you do if you have, kyphosis already and you already have those strange curves? So can you do those kind of yoga poses? What do you have to do to be extra careful so you don't have other like mini fractures?
Yeah, so I'm going to start from your last question because I might need you to remind me the first question. So if it's not scoliosis, right? It's forward curvature?
Well, for me, my spine is curved in every way that it's not supposed to be. So I have scoliosis, kyphosis, and lordosis. And the neck one, I don't know if I have fractures or not, but I know that in like one of the big S curves, the side to side ones, I've got bone spurs happening and it's interfering with the nerves. I'm not sure about fractures, but it wouldn't surprise me. So that's kind of where I am.
Okay, there are poses for scoliosis, and usually like the thoracic curve is going to curve out to the right to protect your heart. And so what you want, like if you think of a like one of those towers that, like, I don't know, electric or some kind of utility tower, and then it's held straight by tension wires coming down on both sides, right? So if the wire is tighter on one side, this is not a good example. It's going to pull it this way, and it's going to curve out. So I'm doing backwards from what you're, right? So if it's tight right here, it's going to pull it. I don't know if you can see my finger. And then the curve is going to jut out the other side because this is tight. There's a few poses that you can do for scoliosis by having that the side that the curve juts out down, like in a side plank, or there's a few different ones that will strengthen that side. So it's going to help straighten that curve. And it's the same principle, like holding the pose.
Do you give private lessons for people who may need that kind of support?
I do, yeah.
So maybe Catherine would be an idea to get in touch with Karen to.
Yeah, cool, thanks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what was your other question? I'm sorry.
The other question was about what kinds of yoga poses, but also like, what about weightlifting, those kinds, other kinds of things to do?
Yeah, so weightlifting is good. If the rest of it, like your joints and everything, can handle it. So a lot of people that, you know, have osteoporosis have arthritis or something that would cause them to be uncomfortable in lifting weights. And also when you're just using your body weight, there's not so much of a chance of injury from trying to lift too much.
What about bands and things like that? Can they also help?
Bins?
Bands, you know, these stretchy bands, exercise bands.
Yeah, if you, they're good as long as you can. So a lot of people show up to my yoga class with that instead of a strap, where the strap is not so stretchy. Mm-hmm. And we can, like, if you have something that's, static instead of stretchy, you can use more of your muscles to develop muscles than because there's more resistance, actually, even though those are called resistance bands. Yeah, but I mean, any exercise you can do is better than no exercise, right?
Yeah. Am I correct that you can build your bones by doing anything that puts a bit of strain on them, exercise wise, be it walking, be it yoga, by holding the pose, by weightlifting, anything that you can do as long as you're moving correctly.
Yes.
Is that right? Okay.
Right.
Thanks.
And if you're weightlifting, you still want to hold your weight for a while, so that process happens for up to like the 72 seconds. Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's great. You have a lot of knowledge, Karen, and you have a lot of skill as well with the yoga. It's a fantastic combination.
Thank you. And it's like, I'd rather do that than take drugs.
Can you put your website on?
I put her website on in the chat.
Oh, okay. You want me to do that?
Yeah, I did it.
Oh, you did? Thank you.
And the website is on the slides as well. I love the name of your website, Karen, by the way.
Oh, thank you. It's all a recipe for life, right?
Exactly. Great. Right. Any more questions, anybody? Any closing thoughts, Karen, just the.
Oh, no, thank you for being here. And I just really hope you don't cause yourself stress over any numbers any doctor ever gives you. Just know that you're in control.
Good advice, really good advice. Okay, well, thank you all for coming. And thank you again, Karen, for a wonderful presentation. And just look for the recording on the ERC recordings page, okay? All right, bye-bye everybody, see you soon, okay.